Hello, and welcome to the last in the series of the Aluminium On Air podcast, brought to you in association with Aluminium International Today, the leading B2B magazine for the global aluminium manufacturing and processing industries. I'm Nadine Bloxham, editor of Aluminium International Today magazine and content director for the Future Aluminium Forum. Across this series of podcasts, I have had the pleasure of speaking to industry experts and well-known faces about the latest technical developments, new projects, investments, and general goings-on. This week, I spoke to Benedikt Sobotka, who is the CEO of Eurasian Resources Group, about how the sector is exploring the use of renewable energies, how digital technologies are innovating upstream processes, and what the lower carbon economy will mean for the future of aluminium. Welcome, Benedikt. Thank you very much for joining me today on what is our final episode of this Aluminium On Air podcast. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you, Nadine. Pleasure to be here.
That's great. And it's been a really good series. So I think we've managed to cover lots of different topics, and today will be no different as well. We've had a bit of a running theme through all of these podcasts, which is just to get the each guest to then ask a question for our next guest. Now, you're obviously our last guest of this series, so you managed to escape the question, but
I get a lot of questions from other people then.
Yeah, no, I'll just fire one at you. It wouldn't be fair to suddenly give you 11 questions to begin with. So our previous guest we had on was Rick Hindley, who is the CEO of the Aluminium Packaging Recycling Organisation here in the UK. So his question was, how do you think we can make a difference with regards to aluminium recycling and get more material back into the value chain?
Mm-hmm. Well, aluminium compared to many of the other metals already today achieve some of the highest material recycling rates for end-of-life products. I think it's up to 90% for transport and construction applications, and I think still 75% of all the aluminium ever produced is still in use, which tells you something about the degree of circularity. So the aluminium sector is actually much, much further advanced than, let's say, the lithium industry or the cobalt industry or industries where we still struggle to go to recycling rates above 10%, which is shocking if you think about it. And particularly the automotive sector, I think, is a sector which is the prime target for more recycling. Today, cars are increasingly being built with more electronics. They contain higher value raw materials, but still cars aren't recycled to the extent that they could be. And of course, aluminium is among those three core metals that are being extracted from cars. Already today, they account for just around 60% of the value of the recycled material from the car. And there's upside because more aluminium will be used in cars going forward. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about that later when we talk about the electric vehicle and the lower carbon economy and what that will mean for aluminium penetration rates and thus recycling rates in general. I think it's the aluminium industry is further advanced than many others.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, actually. And that's been kind of a common thought as well from a lot of our the guests that have joined me on this podcast as well, that we're really advanced, but we also need to then work quite hard to make sure we're kind of collaborating across the sector as well to really get the benefits from that. So one other thing we've kind of talked about to begin with is this idea of aluminium and it's referred to as a transition metal. So what's your opinion on this, and what do you also think this means for the industry?
Well, I'd like to refer to aluminium as a metal that you need in order to achieve the Paris Agreement goals. Without aluminium, we will not achieve them, whether that's as a lightweight material, whether it's in the electric vehicle space. We will need more aluminium in end products to achieve the Paris Agreement of climate change goals. So in a way, transition, it's an absolutely critical metal for achieving a lower carbon economy. The challenge we have in aluminium is that there still is the traceability of the supply chain in aluminium. When it comes to its CO2 footprint, it's still at its infancy. We need to develop a lot more traceability for the supply chain to give customers a choice, because at the moment customers barely have that choice. And we're working actually at the World Economic Forum on on various tools, typically blockchain-based tools for traceability, to give customers a choice. They have to be able to decide whether the product that they buy has a high or a low carbon footprint, and that will be a very key driver for then driving consumer behavior, driving purchasing decisions, and thus driving behavior on the industry side, because you need a level playing field. You can't compete just based on regulation, because they tend to be very regional as opposed to global. And in the absence of a carbon tax, you do need to give the power to customers to drive choices for better CO2 footprints.
Certainly, and that's interesting, actually. This idea of traceability is huge with the Future Aluminium Forum that I'm also running in a few months is looking at how digitalization can drive things like this, and traceability is a massive point there. Do you just... on the subject of that, while we're there, then, do you think we are kind of ready as an industry to move towards this kind of, this kind of traceability across our supply chain? Are there areas that we really need to be focusing on more? I don't know, more upstream rather than downstream, for example.
Yeah, look, we still are as an industry at its infancy of what I would like to call probably the biggest purchasing order of history. The transition to the low carbon economy is the world's biggest purchasing order ever made. And you start to see today, I mean, when President Xi announced that China will become carbon neutral by 2060, since that announcement, I think the composite renewable energy index in the Shanghai Stock Exchange went up by 30%. Now, there's now companies that are in the renewable energy space that are worth significantly more than most of the oil companies, which shows you that the market is already anticipating that the industry will get this as a fantastic business opportunity and not just as a regulatory challenge. And then, of course, the industry has to follow because, as I mentioned, what I called earlier, the level playing field, we have to make sure that the companies that today they are very much competing essentially just on price have the opportunity to differentiate based on other characteristics such as the CO2 footprint. And you see some very good developments, whether it's by CRU that are publishing CO2 footprint levels, whether it's the LME that's making it more transparent. That's exactly what we need, but we need more of that, because then we'll give a difference between how the products have been produced, how the metal has been produced, how it's been stored, has it been shipped, has it been recycled? And of course, the best aluminium unit is the one that's been around, that's been recycled in terms of traceability and environmental footprint. So we need a lot more recycling. And I think we will see more of that as the Chinese industries and the Chinese Chinese economy is maturing. You will see more secondary aluminium being reshuffled into the system, which today in China is still much lower than in other regions.
Yes, definitely. And I think it's this idea of knowledge and knowledge sharing, really, as well, because as an industry, we're quite happy to really promote what we're all doing, and especially when it comes to green credentials, promote what we're doing. But we need to be sharing this on a level where we can then act together, I think.
Exactly. And it needs to be almost a conversation to be held in a pre-competitive space. For example, the global battery lines that I'm honored to co-chair by the World Economic Forum, which looks at an end-to-end from mining producer to the end users of energy storage systems in mobility and in energy generation and storage. We look exactly at this pre-competitive space. How can we work together as an industry to lower the CO2 footprint, to improve traceability, to improve compliance to standards, human rights standards, and so on in the energy storage space? And I think we need something like this, very similar to this GBA in the aluminium industry. Because as we are shaping this lower carbon economy supply chain, which I said before, is a fantastic business opportunity. And we have to make sure that we all have the same rules and standards and we apply those consistently across the world, including in China and in many other regions. So it's a big challenge, lots of work to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a really good point, actually, like you say, getting everybody together in one space where it's, non-competitive, we can all just, we're all working towards, the similar goal at the same time. So that's, a really good point. One thing that is interesting having you on this podcast is that we can actually talk a bit more about the primary side of things, because I haven't actually been able to do that with some of the other guests. So one point I wanted to look at is obviously that ERG is one of the largest suppliers of alumina in Eurasia. So I'm just interested to know how this sector in particular is innovating, because we hear a lot about obviously all these smelters now that are working towards this smelter of the future idea and things like that, and efforts to adopt digitalization actually across the value chain. So do you see this as far upstream as alumina refining?
Yeah, absolutely. And also in the bauxite production. I wouldn't say that's specific to the upstream of aluminium. That's probably more specific or general to most of the mining industry and the upstream side. The opportunities for digitization are enormous. They've unlocked great opportunities to reduce cost and safety in particular. That strengthens efficiency and use of resources, allocation of capital. So in general, asset productivity has grown already with some of the initiatives. I'll come to those in a minute, and they can grow further still. One of the best examples is that it's actually now possible for a certain period of time to run a company from a screen. I mean, who would have thought that a year ago that some of the largest mining companies for months and months have operated safely around the world with management teams essentially locked in their offices? I mean, who would have expected that? I mean, that's testimony to all the fantastic workers and that have diligently and safely worked on the operations despite lockdowns and other challenges, which is, I mean, we've had some true corona heroes. But more specifically, the digitization for us is a great enabler for productivity improvement and doing it in a safe way. And I'll give you an example. We introduced a system called Vibro Diagnostics. So we installed vibration sensors to our aluminium plant. And it helped us with preempting equipment failures and avoid unplanned downtime. And that's been given us real bottom line impact. So using smart mine sensors and tools to help us identify faults earlier, do preventive maintenance, identify safety risks earlier. So the potential is anywhere between 10 and 30% of the cost of production if it's done right, and of course efficiency improvements, which again brings us back to the discussion about lower carbon economy. We have to be more efficient in the way we operate and work and use resources and water and energy in the production itself. Even though, of course, the primary source of carbon emissions in the aluminium space is the smelting, where of course you're very much tied to your ability to access lower carbon electricity, which of course is as a question of your installed base as opposed to your choices.
Yes, certainly. And it's interesting to see actually, and it's interesting to be given a bit of a case study as to how digitalization is being implemented in a plant as well. So that might be something that we can hopefully come back to at some point, and it would be very topical for the Future Aluminium Forum. So I might have to get you involved there as well and see how we can also present the technology there. So again, we're sort of touching, this is the interesting thing, it seems to always come back to looking at, you know, this carbon footprint idea and the green energy side of things. And obviously as the only producer of high-grade aluminium in the Republic of Kazakhstan, have you got any kind of examples on what efforts are being made by ERG to monitor and then stay on top of your carbon footprint? Are there any other kind of technologies being involved here, or are you working specifically to any sustainability targets?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, you're always in a way hostage to the historic asset base that's been driving your operations. So when that's predominantly coal based, such as in, for example, Western China, and that is very difficult to change. Now in areas like Kazakhstan and of course Western China, these are areas that have phenomenal wind power potential. They're scarcely inhabited. They're very shallow. Very flat terrain. They have these beautiful wind canals where we've got 2, 3, 4 times as much stable wind as you would find anywhere else, so better than any offshore applications, and you're onshore. And you've got no population that in these regions that would be disturbed by the turbines. So we're going very much long onto wind power. We think that's fantastic potential in Kazakhstan to offset some of the CO2 emissions that we ultimately at the moment cannot avoid in generating electricity. So one way is just the generation, but then of course you have to make sure you use that efficiently, and you use as much of the energy generated in the process as let's say, a byproduct and recycle that back into the process by, for example, using off-gas power generation. So when you, in your production process, you would generate off-gases and then you would try to refunnel them back into by generating power or heat. But of course, in the case of Kazakhstan, a lot of the energy that we do generate as a byproduct is typically used for heating purposes in the, for the local population. So it's, we try to use as much circularity in the energy balances as we can. But of course, it's a combination of changing your generation base, making that more efficient and using more renewable energy, using the energy in your process more efficient, and then trying to recycle as much of the off-produced electricity or energy or heat or steam to recycle it into your process. So, but it's a long journey. It's a 10, 20, 30 year challenge because of the installed base. And that's you will see that struggle in other areas, for example, in China. I guess there is a reason why China can only reasonably announce to be carbon neutral by 2060, because the base is already installed and it will be running for many decades.
Yes, this is obviously something we see a lot across the aluminium industry and in industries in general, really. Obviously, a lot of the infrastructure is already in place. So it's then either looking at, you know, complete rebuilds of certain technologies or ways we can then adapt within them. But I think it's really interesting to see how much is now being done and how much is coming to light that we can do as well.
Yeah. What is what helps us is that we're very much integrated. So the bauxite we make, we refine very close to the mines. And then from the mines, we smelt them very close to the refinery. So in a way, we don't ship material around the world as some other producers would have to do to find their customers. So our material at least doesn't travel very far, and that obviously helps with the CO2 footprint.
Yeah, that's a great point. So from the very beginning, you're already already lowering your carbon footprint there, which is great, and it's obviously good.
And that's one of the challenges. Yeah. And that's one of the challenges you'd find in when you start tracing the carbon footprint of a ton of ultimate final aluminium end product, is you have to trace not just how it was produced, but how was it handled, treated, shipped, stored. There's significant emissions along the way that are, they tend to be hidden and not as visible. People tend to focus predominantly on the generation of electricity in the primary smelting as opposed to the end-to-end supply chain.
Yeah, certainly. And this is, again, another way, you know, we're moving towards, which is looking more a closed loop within, not just within the recycling side, which is what a lot of people look at, obviously, the aluminium that's already in circulation, to try and close that loop, but also the loop, like you're mentioning, with keeping everything kind of as close as possible and yeah, bringing it together. So this is, again, this is really fascinating, because we've ended up on the kind of renewables topic, but just looking at any other specific projects or initiatives that ERG is working on, is there anything you'd kind of like to highlight and let us in on what we can maybe expect in, well, towards the end of 2020 and going into 2021?
We're very much involved in the World Economic Forum's initiative on blockchain. There's a project of, by now I think it's seven leading mining companies that focus on traceability and carbon footprint of metals. We're looking at copper, we'll be looking at aluminium. And that's one of the very specific initiatives where we want to make sure that there's a differentiation. I mean, ultimately, we want that differentiation to be reflected in the price. And of course, that's, as I said, in the absence of a carbon tax, which would be a much better, but much better way to raise the bar for the industry. But it's probably from a regulatory and regional regulatory point of view and geopolitical point of view, very difficult to implement. This kind of differentiation is probably the most effective way of driving change in behavior and buying patterns. So we think that's a very good initiative by the forum, the Economic Forum, to work on that. And of course, we've a number of, let's say, if we go from the 30,000 feet now back down to the operations, we've got a number of environmental upgrades in areas in geographies like Kazakhstan and also Russia, where the asset base tends to be legacy assets. particularly from the Soviet Union times. There is a lot of improvements on environmental emissions, whether it's dust, whether it's CO2 and others, just by renovating and upgrading your facilities. And we've invested enormous amounts, and we're planning to put another $350 million over the next 10 years into environmental cleanup programs to reduce air emissions in Kazakhstan, which we think is, for a producer with a legacy asset base, is probably the biggest, I call it the biggest bang for buck, is actually not go and build a new power plant, but actually is to go and take your existing facilities and upgrade them and putting in the most modern filter technologies and most equipment, most efficient rotating equipment. So what we call is our 10-year environmental strategy emission reduction program, and we've allocated $350 million to that just for Kazakhstan in the division.
Wow, that's really interesting to hear, and like you say, to be able to have that in place already, but just be able to upgrade and to work on what you have, and the difference that will make as well will be impressive.
You see a very similar rejuvenation of the installed asset base in China. I mean, the CO2 and energy intensity of a unit of aluminium in China has dropped rapidly over the last 10 years. Because of their use of more efficient technology and high amperage and so on. So it's there's a lot of innovation in the actual production that can still unlock significant efficiency and energy savings and emission reduction footprint.
Yeah, certainly. And this is exactly what we've kind of come to see across this series of podcasts as well, is how much investment and how much dedication the aluminium industry actually has when it comes to working towards a more sustainable value chain. So it's really good to see, and it's great to see a producer with so much interest in how it can be done, and also really with a plan as well.
It's great. Actually, if you think about it, if you look at the institutional investor roundtable, or these very large groups of institutional investors and pension funds, they are very keen on deploying capital into the lower carbon economy investment theme. The challenges is that there actually aren't so many investable themes. So if you're a big Temasek or a big Norwegian government fund, it's very difficult to invest very large amounts of money into these kind of investment teams to get exposure to the low carbon economy. It's very difficult. In a way, the aluminium industry would be a fantastic opportunity if you help the industry to rejuvenate and reduce its CO2 footprint. This is actually an investment that is significantly and sufficiently large and can give very significant returns, not just financial returns, but in combination with environmental returns. So we're actually now discussing with a number of institutional investors to see if they want exposure to this investment theme, how can we help them defining an investment proposition that allows them to get exposure to a good commercial return and a good green return.
Brilliant. That's really good to hear as well. And I think that would be something that would be of interest to a lot of listeners on this podcast as well. So we're always with these, we're tight for time, and I could continue talking to you about this forever. And you're obviously a very busy man with people want you, the phone's ringing and emails probably going crazy as well. So as I mentioned, you have the honor of being our last guest on this series of the podcast. So you don't actually need to ask a question necessarily for the next guest, because I'm not sure who they'll be yet. But do you have a final comment on what the aluminium industry can expect as we move into 2021? Maybe not just from an ERG perspective, but a personal point.
Well, we're coming into a very volatile period. I mean, the first half of the year was very challenging. I mean, the prices, they're now hovering at around 18 months high. It was just very surprising looking at the demand. Demand has dropped and supply has increased, so which is positive. I mean, the initial decline was probably reflected in the slowdown in the transportation and construction sectors. They both account for around 50% of consumption. So they're now gradually stabilizing. And of course, the significant investments and government stimulus in China has helped a lot stabilizing the market. Next year will be challenging. I mean, hopefully the recent imports into China, they have helped stabilize the market. I mean, China's became a net importer for the first time, I think, in 11 years in August. I mean, some of it was technical because of the arbitrage opportunities, but it tells you that we depend on China more than ever before to be the market of balance, not just for China in China, but also now for the world. The outlook, I think, is not easy for aluminium. But fundamentally, this is if I was an investor, this would be a metal to be long in because of the fundamentals that drive what you called, Alan, the transition metal. Without aluminium, no low carbon economy, and that's the biggest theme for the world economy in the next 20, 30, 40 years, because the current economy and world economy that's based on carbon is unsustainable. So it has to change, and it can only change with aluminium. So the fundamentals are very strong. And look, you can discuss about when there's a surplus and a deficit this year, that year, but the long-term fundamentals are very, very solid. So if you, maybe the next 2 years, I'd be careful about aluminium for the next 12 to 18 months, but I'd be very bullish in the long-term. Particularly as we start looking into hopefully a carbon pricing mechanism, which will underpin prices, particularly for lower carbon aluminium products, and the electric vehicle story I mentioned that before is something that will not go away, and that in itself we believe has the potential to be a $250 billion business for the aluminium industry. There's a lot more aluminium needed in electric vehicles than in classic internal combustion engine. In addition, with the with cars becoming lighter weight to reduce consumption. Now that's less important for electric vehicles, but once you've designed a model with more aluminium, you will use it for the electric vehicle. You don't build a heavier electric vehicle just because you can. You would use the same. You would apply the same. So it's that electric vehicle trend, plus all the additional requirements in grid infrastructure, and particularly DC infrastructure, will be a very strong fundamental driver for aluminium consumption in the long term. So it's a metal that's been there for a long time. It won't go away, and the fundamentals are very good.
Well, I think that's a very good positive kind of point to end on there as well. After the year we've all had, I think we know we can't make any plans, and we can't really make any real proposals at the moment. But yeah, it's good to know, and I think we're all very aware that aluminium has such positives to it that we're working towards some really interesting and exciting times. So hopefully, yeah, we'll see a lot more. But thank you so much, Bendik. It's been great to speak with you. And I think I might even try and take you offline now and try and pitch you to see if you can be involved in our future aluminium forum, because I think you've got even more to say and more that we can use and hopefully, yeah, keep the conversation going.
Well, thank you, Nadine. I appreciate that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the chat. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Aluminium On Air podcast. The next series will be coming soon, and if you'd like to join me on an episode, then please do get in touch. You can also find out more online and listen to all of the other episodes by visiting www.aluminiumtoday.com/aluminiumonairpodcast.